Now, churches, much like schools, these are things that unfortunately we never thought we'd have to worry about. At least I didn't, 20 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, it's crazy that we've got to worry about people coming into schools, coming into churches to target these places. And does anybody know where the largest act of terrorism at a school on U.S. soil occurred? Largest act of terrorism. You probably look like you really know it. Bath, Michigan. You know the year? It was in the 40s. You're right. It was in the 40s. I think it was in the 40s. Does anybody know what happened? Was it the 20s? Maybe it might have been 20s. I have to look it up. All right. So it wasn't Columbine, right? We remember Columbine. We remember Virginia Tech. We remember all sorts of different things that have happened recently. Actually, I think it was 1927, and there were 40-some individuals that died in this attack. I believe it was 46 individuals. And what happened was a guy, he was actually on the school board, but he was a farmer on the school board, and he was upset with the taxes being raised to fund the school. So the night before, he goes and said he had some military background, set up some bombs inside the school, waited for the kids to come in, set it off, and killed the entire middle school class in Bath, Michigan. And then he had secondary devices set up, so when the police and fire came, he let those off, and those took out some police and firefighters, along with the superintendent, I think principal. So a horrible thing happened right here in Bath, Michigan that not many people know about. But it's been going on for years, right? We say it's picked up steam. It's something that is somewhat new to us, if you will, but it has happened in the past. And now, unfortunately, we're having to think about different ways to keep our doors open at the churches and be inviting at the churches, yet somehow have some sense of security and safety when we're there, right? Churches, it seemed like, back in the day, I grew up in Lansing, that you could go, at least to our Catholic churches that we were around, but you could get into those buildings 24/7, it seemed like. And now the Methodist church I go to now, I gotta enter a keypad, I gotta turn off the alarm if I wanna get in after hours, if it's not 8 to 5, Monday through Friday type of thing. And it's unfortunate, but if we don't do that, things will be stolen and there'll just be lots of other problems. So, deadly force incidents at faith-based organizations from 1999 to 2017, so just short of 20 years there. But the totally deadly force incidents were 1,617. And at about 28% of those, we had a death. Or we had some deaths involved. So it's happening. And we've got to take it seriously. And we've got to understand that it's something we really need to look at. Now, in the group here, do I have pastors? Is there pastors that are in here? No pastors. Is it safety team leaders or security leaders? Okay. Is it it's financial people? Is that what's the rest of you? So what's the draw from the financial end? What are you guys? I mean, are you related to the safety part? Are you worried about the liability? What's
me.
It's you. You forced them to come. Gotcha. What's that? Okay. Said you should be here. All right. So hopefully you take back some of what you have here, either to the pastor, to your safety team leaders, but you really think about ways to potentially implement some security. And you might have some. And so part of this isn't just me talking to you. It's you telling the group what you're doing at your facilities. Is anybody here not from Michigan? Okay, so everybody looks like they're from Michigan. Okay. All right. What do you think the top three reasons are for deadly force at a, we're talking at a church?
Anger.
Okay, anger. Maybe even a little more specific. It's not bad. Domestic violence, right? We see a lot of domestic violence issues, and that's where someone, you know, husband usually gets upset with the wife or the girlfriend. They bring a weapon. They do something stupid. Personal conflict. It could be just about anything. They're, you know, mentally not stable. And then a robbery. All right. So three things that we commonly see are more related in these dynamics. This tells you which denomination has been the most targeted. There's really no rhyme or reason per se. I'm not too hung up on this, but non-denominational and Baptist, obviously in the 20%. It's just where these shootings have occurred. All right, we're not going to use the names of these individuals, and I had to refresh my memory before I came in on each one of them. But these next three slides are individuals that were involved in some church shootings as of recent. This one was in Charleston, South Carolina. I can't even read my own handwriting, but it was a church in South Carolina, and 9 people were killed. This next one was Burnett Church of Christ in Tennessee. 1 died, 7 were injured, both with guns. Third one was one of the bigger ones. This was First Baptist Church, which left 26 people dead in Texas. Okay? So these individuals are out there for the various reasons of why they're coming, but these are not who we're focusing on today. We're going to focus on these individuals who helped stop the assaults that were occurring. Alright, so the first guy is Robert Engel. He confronted Mr. Burnett, the individual from Tennessee, and had a little wrestling type match. He wasn't armed, but was able to restrain him long enough to get, law enforcement then arrived and was able to take care of business. These two guys gave chase. I don't know if they were armed or not, to the individual in Texas, to the First Baptist guy in Texas. So he goes on his shooting spree, shoots, kills 26 people, injures some others, and these two guys are giving chase to him. Now this lady here, this is not related to the third picture up there, she was on her church's safety committee team out in Colorado Springs, and she was armed. They had, they brought in, their church allowed weapons to be carried by their safety team members. And so she shot and killed the individual. Which then I guess brings me to my question to you is, should we have guns in churches? I don't have the answer, right? I'm not here to tell you, what the state police says or doesn't say per se. I'm just asking you, is that something that you would support in your church? Some people shake their heads up and down. Some aren't quite sure. It's awkward, right? I mean, having a gun in a church, it doesn't seem right, really. But
the difference between everyone knowing versus no one knows who has one. Some churches say, okay, maybe you have 10 people. We all know who it is, or we don't know anybody who has it. It's all quiet.
Right. And so the pastor could, and we're going to talk about the laws and what the pastor has the authority to do as it relates to concealed weapon. But a concealed weapon is something that, I put on my ankle and I put my pant leg over it so nobody knows I have it. It's concealed. I have a gun on my hip, but I put something over it. It's concealed. There's actually no law in Michigan that prohibits somebody from strapping a gun on their on the side, not having it concealed and walking down the street. There's no law that prohibits that. But you go into cities, you go into villages, you go into townships, they might pass some city ordinances or things like that, but nothing stops somebody from taking a gun, putting it on their hip and striding down the street. Now, there are laws that say you can't bring it into a church, you can't bring it into a school, things like that, right? If someone gets a concealed weapons permit, they get a little bit more authority, but it's still limited inside a church. Now, a pastor has the right or has the ability to actually give consent or permission to some people in his congregation, if he chooses to carry a weapon. But that's a big deal, right? I mean, that's a huge deal. Who would you be giving a weapon to? Is that individual trained? What's their mental stability? How do you know this person on your safety committee? Do you know them really well? One of the examples or stories I like to say is when I was I was down in training. I was assigned, this like 20 years ago, I was assigned to work temp staff at our training academy. And while at temp staff, we were training the recruits and got to interact with them, with fake weapons on our sides. Let me even back up from that. Every time, we're going to come back to that story. Every time I go to a scene, the scene of something, there's a gun at it. If I go to a car deer crash, there is a weapon at that scene. If I go to a domestic violence incident, there is a gun at that scene. Every single time. It doesn't matter if it's a civil standby, if it's checking a well-being at a house, there's always a gun. Why is that? What's that? I bring the gun. I walk into the room, I bring a gun, right? So every time. Now, I didn't see a deer until I was, 15 years old. I mean, city of Lansing, I was a city kid, and I may have saw it, I guess, before that. But I didn't hunt, I didn't really go fishing, we weren't outdoorsy people, we went, did the sports type of stuff. But my point being, I didn't fire a gun until I got into state police. Right? I didn't hold a handgun. So I'm pretty good with it. I got a badge here that says I shoot at a gold level. I've got a good marksmanship, but I'm not an expert. Right? I'm not an expert in the weapon. So let me fast forward now back to that story I was telling you. So I'm down there at this training, this recruit school, and we're training the recruits, and I'm role playing as the police officer. And this other state trooper is role playing as the bad guy. And we're standing in this group of 20 recruits and we're showing them how to do a traffic stop. And so he is trained in martial arts and he does a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, on the side, outside of the state police. But I had him on the car and he had his, you know, hands up like we're supposed to. And I'm showing the recruits, you know, you pat the arms down and you come down. And in one motion, I kid you not, he reached back, grabbed my gun, my holster, turned around and pointed, you know, it was a fake gun. It was we had a wooden gun, but pointed it at me and said, "Bang, you're dead." And I couldn't believe it. Like, you know, my gun was secured in my holster and it happened so fast. And it stuck with me that this, you know, trooper, good guy, but there's others like that that aren't good guys and good gals that are very well trained. And so I show up to the scene as a trained state trooper. I bring a weapon there. There could be somebody stronger, faster, more familiar with weapons. Now, you give a gun at a church to somebody to carry around that isn't a state trooper, that may not have the training. My point being, you got to be careful. Right? I'm not telling you not to. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just saying be careful. Go ahead.
What about your taser?
What's that?
Taser.
Well, and so you're right. So then an intermediate weapon, we call them. So you've got a firearm is, you know, deadly force, but what about something in between where you fire the taser off? Again, it's something that takes training. I don't feel comfortable with tasers. We have them in the department. I got trained on it once or twice, you know, 10 years ago. But I'm in management now, so I barely wear this uniform anymore. I squeezed this on this morning to make sure it fits. Come in here. So point being, if you're not training with it and using it, I've seen the guys and gals, the troopers that, you know, and the officers that you go to put the thing on, and you've got to put it on just right. If your hands, you can very easily accidentally shoot it into your hand. And I've seen that done more than once. But absolutely, no, you could absolutely talk to your church and talk to what the pastor wants and what, you know, the safety team recommends, and go down that road. These grounds today, are there armed individuals out here on the grounds patrolling? Does anybody know? I'm not going to tell you. I'm just curious. Go ahead.
I would just like to make a comment from my experience of my little life. That a person, you can feel like you know them well, but under emergency, they can change to a totally different
place. you're absolutely right. They might freeze. They might all of a sudden become overbearing. They might be perfect. And you may think of somebody that this person wouldn't be well at all in an emergency situation, and they do a great job. So you're absolutely right. How do you know until faced with that decision or dilemma? You can pick somebody in the military. Maybe they have, you know, they're great on the outside, but they've got PTSD. Or something going on the inside. You could take a retired officer, but how do you know, again, where they're at? So there's just, my point is there's a lot of liability. And I'm not telling you to do it or not to do it. Some churches do it. Big church, Calvary, I want to think. I guess I shouldn't. I'm being recorded here, so I'm not sure what the church name is. But down in Grand Rapids, I know there's a couple of larger churches where they have security guards. Most of them are not paid. Volunteers, a lot of them current police officers or retired police officers, but they carry their weapons around during church. And they have it all designed where they rotate in, they rotate out, they patrol the hallways, you know, that type of thing. I say patrol. It's not like you would look at them and think that's a police officer walking down. It just looks like a greeter or an usher, you know, somebody walking down the hall and making contact with people as they come in. And that's what you want to do, right? Because we want to keep it friendly. We want to make it a nice environment where people can come in, they feel safe, they feel welcomed. I mean, that's what the church is supposed to be there for. So it's finding that balance. It's easy at the state police post or the military. You can just put some armed guards outside, and if you walk in, that might feel a little intimidating walking by these individuals, but that's not what we want at a church, I don't think. So our goal today, to talk about ways to eliminate places of worship from being soft targets. They need to confront threatening behavior from within its walls and from the outside. All right, so crime really has three pieces, right? We got a suspect. There's an individual that wants to do the harm. We've got another person that's the victim. And we've got a third piece that, who knows what the third piece might be. Got a suspect. What is it? Well, witness, no, but you got a suspect that wants to do harm, a victim that they're targeting. What do they need?
Location
or opportunity. They need an opportunity, right? So they need the opportunity to do it. So what we're talking about is trying to limit this opportunity. And what we talk about with like safety with teenagers and whatnot, and I've got four teenagers at home, and they are my daughters especially, three girls, one boy, but they, well, not all of them, but a couple of my daughters are just glued to that phone, right? So they could be walking in the parking lot oblivious to the cars coming through Myers unless I'm hollering at them to put the phone away, right? So they're getting better at it. But that would be, if I was a criminal, I would be looking for somebody to target like that, right? If I want to steal a purse, am I going to steal a purse from somebody that looks like they know what they're doing, they're paying attention to their surroundings, or am I going to steal the purse from somebody that's just, they have no idea what's coming next? You run up, you push them, grab the purse, and take off, right? So you're looking for it. So what we want to do is talk about how we limit this opportunity, right? We can't really get rid of the suspects. We can't do that. We don't want to be a victim. We'll talk a little bit about how not to be a victim, but we really want to limit that opportunity at our church. So what are some things that we can do? Excuse me, and we talked about this already. We want the church to stay welcoming and inviting while still ensuring our security. Should be open for all to attend and feel welcome. Does anybody know at your church, does any churches currently have to tell me which church you're at, but do you have staff that carries weapons at your churches? Some of you are shaking your head yes. Some of you say, you know, is that something where there's a policy in place already and it's all vetted, or is it just individuals are just kind of carrying it on their own?
Not sure.
Not sure, okay. You don't have to tell me which churches. That's. But so some people are, you know, are trying to take the steps because they feel that's the way to go to be secure. And so we'll get to it and talk a little bit more about it. Now, some other steps we can take, just some natural security. Here you're seeing a house at the before picture. Maybe it's an apartment there. But what can't they see? You know, if you're at the before.
A lot of hiding spots.
Yeah, a lot of hiding spots. You can't really see out any of the windows that are there. Somebody could easily come in, sneak up on you. If you had some ushers or people walking around the perimeter of the building, they still might not ever see anybody because there's too much for them to get in. The other thing, you know, we haven't seen it, but like truck bombs or something like that. Obviously, the fence helps prevent keep people on the, you know, away from the building. You know, the big planters that some places will have planters with cement. And so it's, you know, really it looks nice, but it's to not allow the cars to drive up any closer to a building or to a spot. So that's another thing to keep in mind as well. Anybody know what the broken windows theory says? What is it?
Vacant,
kind of. A police officer out of New York, I believe, came up with this. And the theory was that if there's damage to a building, windows are broken and there's graffiti's up, it tells the neighborhood, it tells the community that we just don't care. Right? That stuff is there. We just don't care enough to get it fixed. So continue on, you know, people doing what you're doing. So the theory was get out there and fix it. Fix those windows, put in the light bulbs, you know, help, and I don't want to say eliminate the crime, because what might it do? It might what? Somebody said it. Might move it. Might move the crime, right? So you, if your store keeps getting broken into, and the light bulbs outside on the city streets are damaged, and there's graffiti out there, and you go out there and you paint the graffiti over, and you go out there and you put the light bulbs up in the lights, somebody might come by and say, man, there's too much light here. Somebody can see me. They can pick up my face on a camera. That's not good. Does that mean they're not going to commit a crime and break into a store? They're just not going to break into your store, right? They're going to go down the street a couple blocks. Now, it might prevent it that night, might stop the individual, but chances are we go back to that opportunity. We don't want to give them the opportunity to do it. So the broken windows theory again, if we see an issue, let's get it fixed. Let's get it addressed. They're painting over the graffiti there. All right. So the individual on the left, where's that guy work? Walmart, right? How may I help you? And I think the other one might be Best Buy. I can't really tell. It definitely looks like a store somewhere. But obviously, what are they doing? Greeting people, right? Do you have greeters at your church? Right? Okay, you have greeters at your church. So do we. We have greeters, right? We always get asked to sign up to do greeting or to do ushering, to work in the nursery. You got to be trained in that one. But so if you're a greeter at your church, are you what's your main job? Have you been told like what your role is and what is it? Just to welcome people? Okay. Well, you could have another job, right? So as a greeter, if you're standing there and you're greeting people and you're shaking hands, and then all of a sudden somebody's walking in with a trench coat on a day like today, does that raise a red flag? Okay, it does. Would you know what to do? Would you know if you're a greeter and you shake this person's hand and it's sweaty and something just doesn't look right in their eyes, and you shake their hand and they say hello and they pass by you briskly and walk into church? What do you do? If you're a greeter with that suspicion, right? Because you know something's not right. Now the hair has stood up on the back of your neck and you know that something's not feeling right. Do you go and tell the pastor? You know, that's 2 minutes before the service is getting ready to start. Do you pick up a phone and call 911? What is it that your policy or your training there tells you to do? And so these are the things that we need to think about ahead of time, and we have a plan in place to go do. And then you've got to get in the ushering. There's so many, you know, right? You're just happy if you can find someone to come in and usher on a weekend, let alone have a consistent group of people. But if you could get that consistent group of people and you could train them, and maybe it's just one or two people and they're there, you know, one or two people each weekend, but they're there with another family doing the greeting each weekend. And they've got some of that extra training to help recognize some of these things. So greeters are a great way to help us not be victims, a great way to help take away that opportunity. You get on the phone, you make that phone call, or you talk to your security team leaders that are there. All right, so safety and security teams, basics, comprised of men and women who have been with the church for a number of years. Typically, fire, EMS, police should be solicited, but with a patient demeanor, genuine willingness to serve should be considered. And then again, I'm not here to tell you what to do with the team per se, right? I'm not here to say that your church should do A and not B. That's for you to decide with your pastors and your church leaders at your church to decide whether or not you want to have a weapon allowed in church with a safety team member, or you want to allow, have a different type of training. Every church is going to be a little bit different. But I will ask you this question and say this. What stops a man with a gun? What is it? Another man with a gun. Or another woman with a gun, right? In the instance I showed you. Somebody comes into the church with a gun, we immediately call 911 because we want what? We want a man with a gun or a woman with a gun to show up and stop this. And they will. They just won't do it within 30 seconds typically, right? It's going to take a little bit of time for that man or woman, that police officer, to get there. And so what's going to happen in the interim between when they're called and when they get there? All right, so of course, having an approved security manual, conducting thorough interviews, if we were to have somebody allowed to do this, or really with the safety team at all, or even with you have somebody volunteering in the nursery, you obviously want to make sure that you're vetting some of these people. Obviously, burnout, we would want to make sure we have enough people. The number of weapons in the building, if you're going to allow that, make sure that you know who has a gun. Make sure you know what training they've had. You want to document your training, do the training. And communication, we struggle with this at our church. Now, our church isn't huge, but it's been around for 150-some years, and we've just continued to add on to it. So it's, you know, it has the main core portion of it that was there 150 years ago, and then we've added bathrooms here and classrooms there, and so it's like a maze. You know, there's just that. It's you know, scattered all over the place. But communication, it's big enough to where you can't just yell down the hall. You know, there's a second floor, there's a basement, and how do you communicate if you are an usher, or check that you are a greeter, and you see someone come in, and you make some extra contact with that individual, you talk to them, maybe you go and you sit by them, or you have somebody else on the security sit by them. How do you communicate that to your other greeter who is, you know, 100 yards down the hallway, and they can't hear you simply by yelling? So they've got radios at Radio Shack. You can get an earpiece even with it, and little low-band radios that work very, very well. So those, that could be a way that you communicate, and it's very cheap. Video surveillance. Everybody's got, I'm sure, all sorts of working cameras in their church. Right? No, you don't. You don't either. They're expensive. And then what do you do with it? Like if you put a camera up, does that mean that somebody's there to watch the camera? You know, right? Or is
backup.
What's that?
We have a backup.
A backup. Okay, so you've got a camera and it records. So it's more, it's not to stop and act in progress. It's to say, hey, our church got broken into last night. Let's see who was outside in the bushes. Let's see who came into the church. Now, you can use it for a little bit more than that if you wanted to, but you'd have to have somebody monitoring it during the church hours or whatever hours, obviously, you want to watch it on the monitor. All right, do we do background checks? I can't get the internet up in here. You do background checks on volunteers?
Yes,
okay. How do you do them? Do you take fingerprints and send them in?
It's a system, verified volunteers.
Okay, verified. So what does that, I haven't heard of that before. What does, I'm going to try to get the internet.
It usually runs through your mission state.
So is it the iChat system?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So iChat, all right. So maybe you guys are familiar with that. I'm going to try to pull the internet up and show you. So iChat is, what it does is it goes out and touches every court in the state of Michigan. So it hits all the public records, right? We've got the Law Enforcement Information Network called LEAN. Can't use that system. We can use it for law enforcement to run backgrounds, to run file checks and things like that. Can't do that for, you know, the volunteers the way we're talking about doing it. So what you can do is you can register your church, and for free you can run background checks on volunteers and personnel that are at your church. And it's www.michigan.gov/iChat. I-C-H-A-T. I-C-H-A-T. So I'm a registered member for my church. I'm a registered member for our I Am Safe. We have a children's assessment center. So I've got those two entities signed up as volunteer organizations. And then I get in with the state police as well. Sir?
Could you repeat that?
Yeah. Let me put it up here too for you. It's www.michigan is spelled out. Michigan.gov. And then a / I-C-H-A-T. I forget what the acronym's for, but criminal history is in there. But if you want to know what your neighbor, you're suspicious about your neighbor, you just put your credit card in there, you pay $10, and you can run your neighbor for $10. And it's going out there, and it's hitting public records. So you could do it. You could pick up the phone and call all 82 or 100, district courts that we have here in the state of Michigan, or you can go in the system, pay the $10, and it does it for you. And I'll tell you. But it's only Michigan-based. It won't go outside of Michigan.
Not that I want to check the neighbors, but you don't have to have anything but their name?
Yeah, name. It's going to ask for name, date of birth. What it'll do is run anybody. Yeah, really, those are the requirements. The first name, last name, date of birth. It'll ask for race, but I always put unknown in there. And that's it. Date of birth. But yeah, I don't know if you can do it by... But you could do like 1-1 of 1960, right? And then it'll hit within 5 years up and below. Correct. And then you may have to run it a couple times if you're not sure if they were born in the 60s or 70s or whatever. But you could run it that way. And it'll come back. And then you got to be careful because sometimes, like a last name like Smith or Johnson, it'll give you a Bill Smith, but then you got to look closely. Okay, the race is white, but they're African American. It says that they're 5'2", but this guy's 6'4". So then you got to look a little bit closer to make sure you got the right person.
And you can have someone with the same name and the same date of birth.
You can. Yeah. That does happen. Absolutely.
And
that. Okay. Gotcha. Well, we got the confession over here. I think.
Not to me. I'm a police officer.
Oh yeah. And you found somebody else with it. And it does. It absolutely does happen.
I was about to arrest him when he come back and give me some more information.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, right? And that's, yep. So it does happen. But it's a good system to use, and we use it for ours. And I think our policy at our church is every year we run the volunteers, and like every 2 or 3 years we run the staff members. So, but it's a written policy. Only the safety committee chair can run it, and then they would give it back to the pastor. So what happens if you get a hit? Right? We've had a couple people where we've run, and there's something pops up. So something that hasn't ever been anything big, but somebody with bad checks or something like that in their history, if that pops up, then what do you do? Does that mean then they can't volunteer in the nursery because they wrote a bad check? Does that mean they can't drive the bus with students to and from? So you got to decide on what you're going to do with it. All right. So the sex offenders. I'm not sure. I've never looked at that website. We do have a website here in Michigan where you can go and see registered sex offenders as well. So and that one is the same Michigan.gov but /SOR. And so you can go in there and check that as well. And that's part of our policy to check that with our volunteers, specifically looking at the nurseries and who would be working with our youth. Of course, somebody hanging around the children's area would be suspicious for no reason if they don't have any kids there. All right. We talked about this, having armed or unarmed individuals, completely up to you on how you want to do it. Places of worship in Michigan are pistol-free zones, according to Michigan law. The exception here, senior authority of the ministry can grant rights to select CPL holders as they see fit. And without a plan, of course, if everybody, so saying that the pastor can basically, or senior church leadership could allow someone to carry a weapon in their church. Obviously, you don't want your church to look like this. it's not what we're going for here. Robert De Niro coming down or this one. I think I saw her out on the grounds earlier. Alright, we talked about this iChat already. And keep a log. And actually we use the iChat system itself allows you to have you can run and see who you ran in that system, so it actually kind of keeps a log for you. But, yeah.
We do use this system at the conference, so rather than everybody just doing it on their own, feel free to call HR at the conference office because that's part of what they do, and they'll run it for you also.
Let's see if I can get that in.
Michelle, do visit. There would be no cost to that, or
my understanding is that's free, isn't it, just to run iChat?
To run iChat is not, you have to register your agency or your church. You'd have to register your church. It doesn't take much. I did it with ours and we're connected here. Once you're registered, then you can do the checks for free. If you're not registered, you can just go in and enter your name and credit card number and, run who you want. So this is the sex offender registry, and of course I did the Michigan.gov /SOR. It didn't come up. It said page not found. So if you go to /MSP, from there you get all these links down at the bottom. There's iChat, and we'll show you that next, and there's the sex offender registry. So if you just do the MSP and then go to the bottom, you'll find it. This is, of course, so again, you can search for different areas for sex offenders. Be careful with this list, though. You got to look at it a little bit closer. The list was designed to keep sexual predators, keep track of them. So somebody that is looking to target, the 40-year-old guys going out there and trying to perp on these 10-year-old kids, right? So that's what it was designed for. It has caught up other individuals, like a high school senior that dates a high school freshman. They have a consensual relationship. Things go south. And now it's illegal. And now all of a sudden, because the girl was under the age of 16, they're on the sex offender registry. So just make sure that you're looking at it closely when you're talking about, individuals and using it to keep people out of different things. But the sex offender registry, I won't per se demonstrate it, just to show you that there's the search and you can put in, you can search by a name, you can search by a city. So you could, and then it, well, I guess it's. Yeah, that's not accurate because I've done it before. So, maybe we'll have to do this on the break. Did I misspell it? I'll try it again. All right, so there it is. So there, a list pops up, then you can click on a specific person. You can look at it through a map view as well. Somebody was showing me that, but there's all sorts of different things you can do and play around with it. So pretty simple to do. Then if we go to the other one, oh, just disappeared on here. Where's iChat? All right, here it comes back. All right, so here's the iChat app. And so again, this would be getting yourself registered. Let's see if mine pulls up. It's so hard to remember all your passwords anymore. You know, I got everything written down. I can't. So you just log in, and then when I log in, I actually get like three different options, like the state police, my church, and the I Am Safe CAC Center. So I pick whatever one I'm running it under for that use. They do limit it, so I think you put the when you make your request, they ask how many searches you think you'll do in a year. So if 1 year we had to do like everybody at our church, we put down 100, and we actually got to the cap. And then you had to call and ask and say, hey, can you bump us up to 150 for this year, free searches, and they did. So, but pretty simple to use. Now here also on this website, if anybody's thinking about joining the state police, I have some recruiting material for you. So. Well, there's no age limit anymore with the state police, so. Current slide. Okay. So that's the iChat system. Contact information there for iChat. All right. So, I mean, the recommendation, the one thing I guess I'd like you to take from here today, and we'll jump into some specific policies in a second, but, you know, to go back and have some type of plan in place. Your plan may not involve having somebody with a weapon, you know, as an armed security guard, right? Perfectly fine. Somebody else's church might involve having that plan. But go back, talk about it, get something in writing, hold some trainings. We have to take it seriously because it is a changing society right now. It is different than what it was, you know, when my dad was growing back up in the 30s and 40s and 50s. It is different. And it's unfortunate, but we've got to change with the times and be prepared. And be prepared. So, you know, law enforcement has shrunk in recent times, right? We work in a county here. I work in a county where our sheriff's department does not have a solid budget. So they have had to dismantle their road patrol. They have no general road patrol deputies. They have deputies that work in townships that are contracted, but no general road patrol simply because there's no budget there. So we're shrinking. We have less officers now, but it seems like we have more safety concerns than ever before.
And churches are a big soft target.
Correct. Yeah, churches and schools, malls. I mean, these are huge things. So this is a training announcement for the 8-hour, kind of the extended course, if you wanted to go to it. Be in the PowerPoint presentation with you if you want a copy of it. You can email and get one. But otherwise, you can look at that MSP.gov website and you'll find this information there as well. All right, so let me close out of this real quick. Pull up a couple of policies here. So I helped come up with four different policies is what our team did. So, and I'll show you what the, start with a simple one. So the fire policy, right? So we've got on a given day, on a given Sunday morning, we're not a huge church. I'm going to guess maybe 400 members. Our Sunday school, which I'm actively involved with, on Sunday school, we have about, you know, on a given day, there's maybe 100 kids there between all the different grades and whatnot. And they're spread out around the building. We've got some upstairs, some downstairs, senior high, and then the nursery and whatnot. So we talked as a safety committee, and this is again back in, you know, this is a decade ago when we started working on this. But what do we do if there's a fire? You know, do the parents know where, are they going to run down the hallway back to their kids? Or are they going to know that we're going out the back door and they're trying to run down the hall to get to us? We thought, let's put a plan in place, share it with the congregation, and let's do a fire drill at least once a year with the kids. So once a year, so we put the plan together, and it's, you know, just a simple plan. If there's a fire, you run over and pull the fire alarm, right? If there's a fire, you call 911. Teachers of the students, if there's a fire, you're going to grab your clipboard, which is right by the door. You're going to get a head count with the kids, and you're going to walk out and make sure you have them all. When you walk out, you shut the door behind you. And you're going to go down the street. If you're in this side of the building, you're going to the other church parking lot right next door to us. If you're on this side of the building, you're walking down to the city hall, which is two blocks away. Watch out for police cars and fire trucks that are probably going to be speeding in after you pull that fire alarm. And then we tell the parents. So we do that drill, right? We do the drill. We let them know what's coming so that the teachers can, you know, review the policy, review the manual. We have our manual sitting right there in that, right by each door as well. They can pull the policy book out and look at it whenever they want. But so we do that, and we practice it with them, and then on that same day, we get up in front of the congregation. We don't make the congregation go through a fire drill, but we point out that the exits are here. If there is a real fire, do not come down to your kids because they're not going to be there. They're already going to be out in one of these two parking lots. Head to one of those two parking lots. But simple, but we put it in place, and then review it with individuals. We have one called lockdown, and this, I use the wrong term for this, because it's, lockdown refers to when there's an armed gunman, and when there's or gun woman, right? I don't want to be discriminatory here, you can have man or woman. But when you have some type of incident where, you know, you've gotta take action because there's a weapon involved and a potential shooting. Now, does anybody know where the term lockdown came from? It's used in schools. Schools will say they're having a lockdown drill. Have you ever heard that? Okay. Anybody know where did it come from? No. Well, is this, you know what? They didn't pull it from prison, but that's a good guess. So back in the 80s, maybe late 70s, early 80s, San Diego, specifically out in California, they were having a lot of issues with gang-related shootings near schools. So school would be in session. Gangbangers are outside in the street dealing their drugs, whatever it is. Something goes south, gunshots are fired, and the bullets would come into the classroom. They would hit the building, they'd come through the windows, and so the teachers, you know, everybody hit the ground. Well, they were having such a problem with it that they developed a policy, and they called it lockdown. If there's guns being fired outside and there's activity out here, we need to lock the school down. Lock the doors, don't let anybody in, and everybody take cover behind their desks and, you know, up by the brick walls, that type of thing, right? That made sense. All right, so fast forward then a decade or so, and you start having some other shootings at schools. And so now all of a sudden, school administrators are saying, man, we need to get a policy in place. Who's got a policy? So they look around and they say, oh, they got some policies out in California. Let's adopt the lockdown policy. But what's the difference? Because there's a difference, right? The difference, what they were trying to prevent, say in Columbine or after Columbine, wasn't the gangbangers outside that there were some stray bullets. They were trying to prevent somebody who was actively coming into the school, specifically to target students and teachers, to kill them. So does lockdown, is that the best thing to do, do you think? No, right? Do you want to be a sitting target and just sit there and wait for someone to come in and take you out? Or do you want to do something maybe a little bit different? And so now we've got different things that are out there. There's ALICE training. It's fight or flight type of training. But basically it's saying do one of three things. Either hunker down and hide, either fight back, or run. It just depends on the situation. So the Virginia Tech shooting, that guy was at the college campus. That guy's walking around shooting different classrooms. And the instructor there was an old military veteran. He ends up, he's out there up on the second floor, but they break out a window, and the students climb out the window. One ends up with a broken ankle, but everybody lives. I think he gets shot, actually, because he's waiting for all the students to get out. But they get out and basically saves the classroom because he didn't hunker down, because he took action to do something different. So, anyways, we've used the term lockdown, but same type of thing. It's really the wrong heading for it. If somebody comes into the church, what are the procedures we're going to follow to take action, if you will? How do we notify somebody if they come into the nursery and now there's an altercation because mom and dad are getting a divorce and dad's getting really upset because he wants to take the kids out. And mom's there saying, no, you don't have a right to the kids. And you got this poor 18-year-old nursery worker not sure what to do, right? What does she do? You pick up the phone, you call 911, you put the phone down. And then if you have a radio in there, you try to radio one of your security team leaders, right? If we actually have air horns at the church. That was, you know, basically our communication to really notify people that there were going to be issues. Now, the air horns aren't there anymore. know, I walk around the church because we set this up 10 years ago, and of course they've disappeared. Nobody knows the policy because we haven't stayed current with the training and whatnot. I've left the security team role. Just was there long enough, somebody else took it over. And this was under my watch, not theirs, you know, saying that we haven't done enough training. We haven't kept up on it. And so that was one of the ways we would communicate. You know, you sound the air horn, and then everybody knows, oh boy, something bad's happening. You know, we're going to get them out of the church or whatever we need to do. Point being, though, develop a policy, train to the policy, keep the policy current. And it's hard because these bad things, they don't happen that often. That's good. It's a good thing they don't happen that often. But we want to prepare for it and then stay vigilant with it. So two others we came up with were severe weather, right? This is probably the one that's most likely to hit, the fire or a tornado type of thing. What do you do if there's a tornado? Could we fit all the kids? I mean, we had a general idea, boy, if there's a tornado, let's take the kids downstairs. That makes sense, except there's a whole bunch of windows in the big hallway that we're talking about putting them in. So we have in one room, there's a window, but there's also a big heavy shade that can come down. And so we can put the kids on the other side of the room, but we learned that the room's not big enough. So now where do we put the overflow? And so now we use a hallway closet type thing. So, and again, we do a little training with the kids once a year. I think we do this training in the spring with severe weather. We do the fire drill in the fall in October-ish. And we get up in front of the church and we give an announcement. If there is a tornado warning, the tornado is sighted, it's coming at us, don't parents come running down the hall to grab your kids. Because there's not enough spots to put adults and parents with where the kids are going. You're going out the sanctuary, right downstairs into the choir room, which is right below the sanctuary. And that's where the parents are going to be. Students and teachers will be in another room. So put it on paper, practice to it, maybe run it by the insurance company, make sure they're on board. And then I think we had a volunteer policy was the other one. And this was for the volunteers, as we're talking about the mandatory checks, requirements, records, confidentiality. So we have a form. They fill out a form. They put down their name, their date of birth. But what do you do with the form then when you're done with it? You know, we shred it. We get rid of it because we don't need to be running around with somebody's name and date of birth. We run them in the system in the iChat, check them in the SOR system. And if there is any type of violation, some type of history, we let the pastor know, and it's basically his or her discretion on how they want to proceed with that individual. So. All right, so that's pretty much what I have for you, reference places of worship and security. We've got changing times, different society. We've got to be ready if something jumps out at us. Whether you arm somebody, don't arm somebody, that's between you, your church leadership, as to how you want to proceed. Have policies in place, practice towards those policies, and prepare for the worst, but hope for the best.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.